From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, Illinois lawmakers worked into the wee hours of Friday morning before wrapping up their fall session. There were some big pieces of legislation that moved through. We will talk about that. We'll also recap a trial that gained worldwide attention. That and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. We also have two guests this week, Mawa Iqbal, who covers the State House for Illinois public radio stations, and Andrew Adams, a reporter with Capital News Illinois. I want to thank both of you for joining us this week.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Andrew, I'm going to start with you. A complicated measure, I thought, that dealt with energy. It was kind of hard to all the moving parts that are in this to get your arms around it, but it was approved. It was sent to the governor. And of course, people saw electric bills really go up this year. This became a pretty big issue. What will this do, and will it help consumers? Does it seem as though that's going to happen from this?
Yeah, this energy bill is huge. It's one of the biggest changes to energy policy and how we do electricity markets in the state in several years. The core of the bill is a big new incentive program for energy storage. These are big batteries that might go with solar panels or you know, big installations that are kind of like an additional power plant in scale. And the idea there is that you save up energy from solar panels when the sun is shining, and then you can use it when the sun is not shining. The real debate over the bill and the real sticking point was that those big storage projects are going to be paid for, or at least subsidized, by a new fee that's going to appear on everyone's bills. So it'll be a couple cents to a couple dollars every month to pay for these big new projects. Now, the people who are excited about this bill, the people who proposed it and are backing it, they say that having these new projects on the grid will keep prices much, much lower than if we did nothing. You know, so the various estimates are thrown around, but it's in the few to low tens of billions of dollars of savings, or so they say. But, you know, like with anything, that's kind of a prediction. There's assumptions being made in the modeling there, so it's hard to guarantee that it's going to do anything. The only thing that the bill guarantees on that regard is that a new charge will appear. So we'll have to see. That comes a little bit down the road in 2030. There's some cost-saving measures in the meantime, like new energy efficiency programs, but we'll have to kind of wait and see for the final effect on everyone's bills.
Have they given any indication how much we're talking about on the bills?
Yeah, it'll be relatively small at first. The Illinois Power Agency, which manages the electricity market in Illinois, they had a pretty detailed model of how the bill would affect how the legislation would affect utility bills around Illinois. In the first couple of years, it'll be a change in literally just a couple cents either way, a couple cents higher than it would have otherwise been. And then you'll start seeing a couple dollars extra on the bill. But the IPA says that the overall price, the overall cost of the bill will be much lower, $5 to $20 lower than it would have otherwise been.
Charlie, you can't blame people for being skeptical, of course, after they saw bills really go up by huge amounts in many cases over the summer this past year. But you also have to invest in the grid. I mean, you have to do that, right?
Yeah, and one of the things that is kind of increased the demand for electric power is the fact that we're getting all these data centers that use a tremendous amount of energy. And so part of the idea, and one of, I think one of the portions of this energy bill would kind of incentivize more nuclear power. And I think one of the provisions, Andrew, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that the bill would eliminate this the kind of moratorium we've had on nuclear power and create incentives for more of these nuclear power plants, which have the problems in terms of what do you do with the waste product, but on the other hand, they're climate friendly because they don't create any greenhouse gases in their operation. And so that's something that's I'd seen it kind of broached as here's a solution to these power hungry data centers, put a small modular nuclear power plant there and use that to power them.
I'll pop in there and just say that Charlie is right, that the bill does lift that ban on new big nuclear reactors. The incentive structure is the same as it has been for several years, but that's going to continue, which you know, folks say saves people, you know, billions of dollars, because the electricity from nuclear power plants tends to be on the less expensive side. I'll also point out that on the data center front, over the summer, I believe Meta, the Facebook parent company, entered into a deal with the Clinton power plant, the nuclear power plant in Clinton. So they're going to give Clinton millions of dollars to stay open, basically, so that Meta can take advantage of those, you know, zero carbon credits.
So just to be clear, Andrew, the governor is on board with this. He's likely to sign this.
Yep. Before it passed, the governor said he would sign it. And then within minutes after it passed, he sent out a statement and said he's looking forward to turning it into a law.
Well, let's move on to some, because there were a lot of things that did pass. Another big piece of legislation I wasn't sure was going to get through, and yet it did, involves mass transit in the state of Illinois and primarily the transit agencies in the Chicago area. Mawa, from what I've seen, this bill would provide $1.5 billion a year for mass transit. How did this all come together? Because it came together in the final hours of the session.
Yeah, it passed at 4 a.m. out of the Senate. And it's something that lawmakers have been trying to grapple with for and figure out a solution to for quite some time now, you know, that they were unable to do that last spring session. But, you know, they're basically going up against a $200 million plus fiscal cliff for Chicagoland Transit. And this revenue package or this package that to gain revenue would essentially include a lot of things, but some of the bigger things would be, you know, redirecting the state's sales tax on motor fuel to transit. It would also dedicate all the interest in the state's road fund to transit. And it would authorize the Regional Transit Authority, which is the body, the Chicagoland Transit body, to increase its Chicagoland area sales tax by 0.25%. It also increases tolls by 45 cents for passenger cars and 30% for other vehicles. So, you know, it's all these different revenue measures that are essentially trying to, like you said, raise generate $1.5 billion a year. And that was certainly a sticking point for a while, right? You know, the House had come forth with these proposed 7% tax on streaming services like Netflix and additional fees on tickets to large concerts and entertainment events, sporting events, and that was completely scrapped because Governor Pritzker came out and was like, I don't want to do that. That's a no starter for me. So that this revenue issue of like, how are we going to generate all this money, that this has been something that the lawmakers have been grappling with and trying to hash out for a while now.
Charlie, gas taxes, road fund money, that's the type of thing downstaters don't like to hear. And a lot of this money is going to wind up in the Chicago area, right?
Yeah, and that's where the big mass transit need is. And just to be clear, this bill does not affect the gasoline taxes per se, but rather the sales tax that you pay on top of the gasoline tax. And that money is now going to go all to mass transit. And the downstate lawmakers were unhappy because they don't think they're going to get a big enough share of this. One of the things I thought was interesting that they also agreed in this legislation to reform the governing structure and to create a new entity called the Northern Illinois Transit Authority. And its role would be to centralize the fare setting, service standards, and infrastructure across the three transit agencies, Chicago Transit Authority, Metra, which is the commuter rail service, and PACE, which is suburban bus service. And so that is something that's been desired for a long time. And that was a sticking point earlier on. And it was interesting. I think Governor Pritzker and his administration kind of brought the Senate negotiators and the House negotiators together and told them, you got to get something done. I was surprised, to be honest, that it happened this fall, because the fiscal cliff, if you want to call it that, isn't going to occur until next year. And there was a lot of thought that, as sometimes happens, frequently happens in the legislature, well, if this isn't something that we've got to do right today, we'll put it off until tomorrow. But they did come together. They ditched some of the earlier revenue proposals that were going nowhere, and they came up with a plan that I think is pretty workable. And we'll see going forward if it's able to solve the problem. It's supposed to generate it more than enough money, so we'll see. And there's also money in there for capital improvements for some of the downstate and on the CTA and the Metro and the services up in the Chicago area.
Mawa, there was also legislation that dealt with immigration enforcement, what's been going on primarily in the Chicago area, but not solely in the Chicago area. What did lawmakers approve?
It's a suite of provisions. It was a giant immigration bill package. And among them, there is this one provision that would allow private citizens to sue ICE agents in civil court if they feel like their constitutional rights have been violated while the ICE agent was carrying out their immigration enforcement duties. So a violation could be something like, you know, an agent refusing to ID themselves, wearing face masks, you know, driving around in vehicles with altered or hidden license plates. And, you know, this question of like whether private citizens could actually do this, you know, what can you actually sue a federal agent in state court, that came up last night. And I talked with Senate President Don Harmon, who was pushing this bill, who was carrying it. And he said that, you know, it's very likely that the case will get kicked out of these lawsuits will get kicked out of state court and into the federal court system. And but he said, you know, it's worth a shot, right? It's worth a try to give people something like another form of recourse against what they're calling are just horrific, horrific tactics that these agents are employing against protesters, people, you know, immigrants in the Chicagoland area.
Well, something that I was not expecting to get done either in the legislative session came up in the final night, and that was something called Aid in Dying. And basically, it allows people to choose to end their own life, and it gives a legal option for that. Andrew, you covered this story. How did this all finally come together? Because this is very controversial, not just in the state of Illinois, but pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, it's definitely controversial. And, you know, this particular, let's say, iteration of the debate over medical aid in dying, which is kind of like what you said, when a doctor can prescribe a lethal amount of medication to a terminally ill patient. This iteration of the bill has been kind of in the works for two and a half years at least. And really it came together mostly in the spring, and then it was a timing issue of getting the votes and the schedules together on the Senate side to actually get it passed. But this has been kind of undergoing the process of legislation, hearing from advocacy groups for years at this point.
Yeah, and Andrew, I mean, this is a bill that I can truly see both sides on this. I can empathize either way you want to go with it. And I think there's probably a lot of lawmakers who feel the same way, but are also a little fearful probably of casting a vote that could be used against them somehow. In the end, though, it narrowly passed. So I don't know if the governor has weighed in on this at all, if he would favor this or not, but it didn't get by with too many votes.
Yeah, it's a controversial issue. There are a lot of religious groups who are opposed to the method. Interestingly, the disability advocacy community, disability advocacy groups are very split on it. Some some groups fear that, you know, you open the door for this kind of procedure and, you know, doctors might suggest it when it might not be appropriate. Whereas others view it as a personal liberty issue that, you know, you should have the choice to do it yourself. Governor hasn't weighed in on it as far as I know, but it will definitely be interesting because, you know, I think a lot of people individually are split on it, at least certainly from the people I've talked to over my time reporting on it.
Charlie, there was also some other legislation that was approved, one involving the federal government. Tell us what this does.
Yeah, the legislature approved a measure to decouple from the federal tax policies, including a bonus depreciation. For many, many years, Illinois' corporate income tax regulations and policies had just piggybacked onto what the federal government did. And part of the of President Trump's tax and budget plan that was passed by Congress, signed into law earlier this year, changed what's called the depreciation allowance to allow companies to depreciate 100% of the cost on equipment, buildings, and other property used for production operations to depreciate the cost in the year that they're placed into service rather than the prior situation where you would depreciate them over a number of years. And the impact of that would have cost Illinois an estimated $260 million this year in our budget unless we changed our rules to, in essence, say that Illinois corporations, you're going to follow the old rules. You're not going to get 100% depreciation. You're rather going to have to stretch it out over several years as you've done in the past. Now, the business leaders opposed the bill. Mark Densler, who's the president and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association, said that this plan would, here's his quote, deprive Illinois manufacturers of important tax benefits that allow businesses to upgrade equipment, expand facilities, and grow jobs. It represents yet another blow to our state's manufacturing industry. And so that is what the business point of view was. But L.G. Sims, who the Senate Democrat from Chicago who sponsored the legislation, said that it was needed to protect the state's budget from what he said was the, and here's his quote, it's protect Illinois taxpayers, ensuring we can continue funding schools, healthcare, and vital services despite the chaos coming from the federal government. The bill is going to go to the governor. It passed the House barely 76 to 33 Thursday night, and it passed the Senate 37 to 19 early Friday morning, and Governor Pritzker is expected to sign it.
Another measure that got through this week involves elected officials and their personal information. This was sort of seen as a security issue.
Yeah, this is this offers the option for folks running for election and public officials to redact, so to speak, their some of their personal information, like their home address, very similar to currently how judges can request to have that information concealed. This was in response to several different situations where public officials have been either targeted or actually attacked. This follows actually the State Board of Elections voluntarily removing home addresses, for example, from certain filings where they were legally allowed to do so already. So really, it just kind of expands what's currently happening for judges and what was happening for some elected officials.
There was the incident last spring where the Pennsylvania governor's mansion was set on fire as Governor Shapiro and his family slept inside. Then a couple months later, a couple of Minnesota lawmakers and their spouses were shot in their homes in a targeted attack. The Minnesota House Speaker and her husband were killed. And then just last month, a right-wing blogger was filming himself outside Governor Pritzker's Chicago home and inviting his followers to, quote, take action following the assassination of Charlie Kirk. And so the legislators are rightly concerned about this. And the sponsor of this bill, Representative Katie Stewart, who was from a Democrat from Edwardsville, said, "Unfortunately, in the political environment that's coming from all angles and all sides, we need to think a lot more about our personal security and protection and that of our family as well," she said. Now, you're right. If my next door neighbor is going to run for the legislature, I'm going to know who it is. But on the other hand, I'm not perceived as being, or I would not be perceived as the kind of threat as some blogger showing up outside the governor's home. One of the things that's interesting about this, I think, is that the legislation would allow public officials to use campaign funds to pay for personal security and security upgrades to their homes, security systems, cameras, walls, fences, and other physical things to protect them. And I suppose as a reflection, it's a kind of a sad commentary on the times in which we're living, that lawmakers think that this is necessary.
Mawa, let me turn to you. You covered a trial that got a lot of attention across the world, actually. And this was from a case, something that happened in Sangamon County last year. It was a sheriff's deputy, Sean Grayson. He was accused of first-degree murder in the death of Sonia Massey. He was a deputy, called to her home, shot her. She died from her injuries. And again, he was charged with first-degree murder, but the jury came back with a different verdict this week. You covered that trial. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, the jury came back with a conviction of second-degree murder. So like you said, the prosecution was seeking actually three counts of first-degree murder, and the jury came back with this lesser charge. And so it definitely sparked a lot of emotions from the Massey family. You know, many of them talked about feeling very disappointed, feeling like justice hasn't been served. You have Sonia's cousin, Sante Massey, who says that he's fueled with rage and that, you know, that this system doesn't work for us, meaning Black people. So there's a lot of very raw emotions. Of course, now what we're waiting to see is how long he gets sentenced for, how long Sean Grayson gets to have to serve in prison. And that sentencing date is on January 29th. And so with a charge like second degree murder in Illinois, the sentencing ranges from 4 years to 20 years. And it's also important to note that it is a offense that is eligible for probation. So, you know, when I talked to the family about that possibility, they said, you know, they're not even thinking about that right now. You know, that their next goal is to just make sure that he gets the heaviest sentence. And of course, one way they could do that is during the sentencing hearing, they can submit victim impact statements. So that could be members of the Massey family, that could be friends, who'll get up and you know, talk about what this whole situation, Sonia's death has, how that's impacted them.
And also, so people know, this case does have a lot of implications beyond just what happened in Sangamon County, because there was legislation that was approved after this murder happened, legislation that affects policing, for example, in the state of Illinois.
That's right, Sean. Yeah, so the legislation was carried by State Senator Doris Turner of Springfield, who actually says that she knew Sonia and was friends with the Massey family and have known them for decades. And she carried the bill. It basically creates stricter standards for hiring new police officers. And it's essentially a way to address what we call a wandering officer problem, which is this phenomenon where you have police officers who have disciplinary infractions or they have just really bad records at one place of employment. But then instead of getting fired, they're just sort of shuffled around to other police departments and their past discretionary or past misbehaviors are sort of swept under the rug. And so when this case first or when the shooting first happened, you know, a lot of journalists uncovered that Sean Grayson had some past disciplinary infractions at his previous police departments. And so it really called into question, you know, how is he able to get hired at Sangamon County? So now we have this Illinois law, and it's called the Sonia Massey Act. There's also efforts to try to get a recall election provision into Sangamon County so that public officials, including a sheriff, can be recalled by voters if they feel like, you know, we need to change who's sitting in that office mid-election or midterm, I should say.
Okay. Well, let's move now to our notes from the field. Mawa, I will go to you first this week.
Yeah, so my note from the field is, I'm trying to track down a juror who sat on this trial. Of course, it was held in Peoria County, and so the jurors are from Peoria. And so, yeah, to just want to talk to them about like how those deliberations went. How did they come to this decision to convict Sean Grayson of second degree versus first degree? So hopefully we'll see, get someone, and they'll return my calls. We'll see.
And Andrew.
Yeah, I spent the first part of this week at the federal courthouse in Chicago, helping my colleague Hannah Meisel cover the kind of back and forth between Illinois and several protesters in Illinois and the federal government and the Border Patrol. Specifically, the situation with Gregory Bovino, the Border Patrol chief up in Chicago, who was ordered to report to court every day, but that was then over halted. So it's a real back and forth over how Border Patrol is handling protesters and enforcement and whether or not they're defying court orders.
And Charlie.
Well, the governor earlier this week signed an executive order to direct $20 million in state funding to support food banks across Illinois beginning November 1st. We're recording on the 31st, so that would be tomorrow, Saturday, as the Trump administration has decided not to provide any money for the SNAP program. And according to the governor's office, almost 2 million people across Illinois benefit from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which is what SNAP is called, or food stamps. And they are going to be really in bad shape. Now, the 20 million is just a drop in the bucket compared to what the need is. But on the other hand, as I was talking to somebody the other day, anything is better than nothing for families who rely on this because of their income level or and the fact that they have to feed their families. And this fund that the governor is tapping was created this past spring. It has roughly $100 million in it, and was created specifically to fill the short-term needs in response to actions by the Trump administration. He also joined a couple dozen states in a lawsuit that was filed this week against the Trump administration's intention to withhold the federal food stamp funding as the government shutdown continues. What our attorney general and other plaintiffs are asking is for a federal judge to order the Trump administration to use contingency reserve money to continue funding the program. Now, the federal government has money available to do this, but the Trump administration's argument is that, well, no, we can't tap that money because it's for, I guess, for unexpected emergencies like hurricanes. So that's where it stands at this point.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Illinois Public Radio's Mahwah Iqbal, and Capital News Illinois' Andrew Adams. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.